We're here doing a special dedication to head coach George Gilbert of Clinton Central. Don Sachs with me. I'm Ken Hartman. So, Don, why don't you start us off?
Well, Coach, first of all, I want to congratulate you on a tremendous coaching career. 39 years of coaching, getting ready to start year 40 when you decided that enough's enough. But in that time of coaching, 230 wins and 196 losses. And that says a lot for you, Coach.
Well, I appreciate that. Actually, it's 231, but John Harrell won't count the forfeit that we got from Prairie the year in the tournament. So, yeah, it's 230 to him. It's 231 to me.
Okay. Well, 22 years at Clinton Central out of the 39 years, that's a lot of time at one school. It's probably almost not heard of other than Coach Wright at Sheridan, 121 and 101 there. And you took a program that was really, really struggling at Clinton Central and made it into a program that people wanted to play.
Well, you know, I came from Ohio and I had 7 years over there. I had 5 years as a head coach and things were going really well. And then I decided I wanted to move closer to home. And I thought I wanted to go the administrative route. So my intent was to come back, become an AD, start working on my administrative so that, you know, I could become an administrator. So I went to Pioneer first for 2 years and found out that I am not an athletic director. I'm a classroom teacher. I did not fit well. I didn't speak out of both corners of my mouth well, and I often said inappropriate things to the wrong people. So I realized early on that my best bet was to stop the graduate work on that. I already had my master's in history. I decided to go to the classroom. So Clinton Central had offered me a job 3 years prior to, but I felt this commitment, which you don't see much commitment anymore from coaches. They kind of follow the money, a lot of them. I felt committed to stay in Ohio and see that group through. And then when I wanted to come back, the only job in the area was the job that I turned down. So sheepishly, I contacted Mr. Brenson at the time and said, hey, if you're interested, I'm interested. I'm out of work. Pioneer did not work out well for me, and I would be willing to come and try to develop a program. So when I came into Clinton Central, they were good enough to hire me. I came in with a little attitude. I felt, you know, this program hasn't won a game on the field in 3 years. They had won a forfeit from Southeastern, played a kid that wasn't, but they had gotten beat by 40 points. You know, we had won in 3 years, and we'd only had like five or six winning seasons in our school's history. So I felt like, hey, you know what? I'm going to go after this, and I'm going to devote my time. The good thing that happened was the fact that we had a sophomore class coming in whose parents were fired up and the kids were fired up. I remember, and some of the people in our community, remember Pat Paris, were sitting in a board meeting when they hired me, and Pat spoke up. And he said, Coach, I'll be quite honest with you. If you can't turn this around, we're probably going to be done with football. That's where we are right now. And I took that as an extra motivation. So the sophomore class was solid. I had really good kids that were seniors and a junior class that were good people. We just didn't have many. Kind of like what's going Central's going through right now. You know, we've had five coaches in the last 13 years at Central. And that's problematic. And you can kind of see why problems have evolved. And here, I had planned to stay three and maybe longer to get this thing going again. And then, obviously, I left after 2 years, begrudgingly, with our program. But anyway, we had this great group of kids, hadn't won. Seniors had never won a game on the field. And third game of the year, we're playing Hamilton Heights, and we beat them. And things changed immediately for us. We ended up 5-6. Frankfort beat us up that year. Our sheriff, I still kid him every once in a while when I see him. He was a thorn in my side, him and his brother. But Rich was an incredible athlete. Football, wrestling, he just was incredible. And he showed it against us. So, yeah, we went 5-6. We won our first sectional game. Had never won a sectional game. Won two sectional games. Got the sectional championship, and we were off on a roll. And following that, the next 2 years, we're ranked in the top five of the state.
Well, you make a point that I think you need to elaborate more on, and I think that there's a lot of parents out there who maybe don't quite understand that. And you said, hey, you know, we had a great bunch of sophomores that were coming up and good parents. And that combination goes a long, long way in successful programs, not only as a development, but down the line for other parents to see what it is it takes for you for them to be participating.
It's the same thing that happened at Tri-Central. You know, you could take either one of those programs, the success I had. You know, Tri-Central was even worse than Clinton Central when I walked into it. Taylor was worse than both those programs when I walked into it. The difference being that at Clinton Central and in the year three at Tri-Central, I had a group of parents that bought in. And if we had practice, by golly, their kid was going to be at practice. Didn't care what was going on. They didn't agree with me all the time. I could tell you stories about some of our early folks, not agreeing with what I did, because I was a run coach, and Central had thrown the ball around for years with no success. And here I am trying to bring a run-oriented program with a weak group of kids. Within 2 years, our kids are strong. We brought the weight program in. Those kids had to be at weights every day. The parents, I remember mothers would have their hair up in curlers, and they would be scooting, taxiing kids, cars jammed with kids, to weightlifting. Kids didn't miss weightlifting. Kids didn't miss practice. It was a complete buy-in. The only thing they expected us to do was get better. And when we got better, they became the greatest cheerleaders in the program. And, you know, we had about 20 years of parents like that. So when I come back 13 years later, the first year, you know, we went 5-3, we were sectional runners-up. I thought, wow, this is heading the direction I want. But I had some kids that had parents that were just dying to win along with their kids. And I think there has to be, you can't win. When people say, well, George Gilbert won all these games. Well, George Gilbert was a part of that. He might have directed it, but it's the community. It's the vested interest of your assistant coaches. It's everybody joining in to make that thing work. And I think sometimes we miss it. You know, when I was in Ohio, I coached offense, defense, special team. I coached it all. My assistant coaches were like giving me suggestions. And in the fifth year, my year over there, as head coach, it would be my seventh year overall. We were about the size of Frankfurt over there. We were a big school. And at the time, there was only three classes in Ohio, and I think they have six or seven now. But at the time, I thought, this is really crazy. Here I have these assistant coaches. Kids, when we win, are giving me the high fives and ignoring them. There's something wrong here. It all came to fruition when we were in the state championship at Tri-Central. When the game was over, and this was important to me, when the game was over, not one boy rushed to head coach George Gilbert to hug him or give him a high five or you know, say anything. They all went to their position coaches. Those position coaches were as excited as the players were. And I remember the years at Central when we won big games, kids would run to their position coaches. Why? Because they were head coaches out there. They had vested interest. They all worked. If I, during a game, had a suggestion, I walked up to them quietly, told them what I wanted to see done, and they'd either say, yes, coach, or this is why we're doing this, and we'd be fine. If I came up a second time, they always knew that, yes, coach, we're going to do whatever you say. But the first time, if they had a plan, and there was times that they did have plans, that I was getting impatient. A head coach shouldn't make any more than three or four calls during the course of a night if he's done his job correctly.
Is a team at Tri-Central your favorite team that you've coached, or is one or two at Central?
No. As a matter of fact, I'll go on the record. There were teams at Clinton Central just as good as the Tri-Central group, but they didn't have the same confidence, or we would have injuries, or something would be amiss. Maybe we were one receiver down. The Tri-Central kids were healthy. And what saved us is we had 10 offensive linemen and 8 defensive linemen that we could interchange. Mm. How many Class A programs can do that without losing a step? Our second group weren't as big, but they were faster. So when that first group needed to come out for a rest, the second group would come in, usually in the second quarter. The offenses and defenses really struggled because of the speed factor that these guys were bringing into the game. So I think the line play was really significant. And, again, we had a total buy-in. When we traveled to the state championship, our parents would set up a tunnel along the road and cheer us as we leave, as we were going down the road. Because Gary Rue, the AD, and I, as coach, we drove the bus. We didn't want to change anything. We weren't going to get a charter bus. We're not treating this any different than any other game that we had been in. So him and I are driving the bus. Then all of a sudden, all these Tri-Central people pass us. They go up a mile, and they do this again. Stop their cars and cheer us. They did this all the way to Lucas. It was unbelievable. And our kids, when they got off the bus, you could just tell that they were focused and ready. I can't say enough about assistant coaches having the right to coach and parents believing in their coach that they hire and then giving him the opportunity to work.
Since we've moved to Tri-Central, let's stay focused for that a little bit here. We're speaking with Coach George Gilbert, former head football coach of the Clinton Central Bulldogs. So, Coach, we're in 2013. You're at Tri-Central. You're getting ready to head into the tournament. You start out by playing all conference teams. You play Central, where you used to coach at. Then you play Sheridan, which is anonymous for you. And then you play Prairie to get out of the sectional. In that tournament run, you play South Adams, Winnemac, and then Eastern Hancock. You scored 127 points, only giving up 44. Man, that's pretty impressive.
Well, you got to win with defense, and you have to be able to throw the ball some. Teams that are one-dimensional offensively and struggle being able to stop the run and the pass really struggle in the real big games. And we pretty much had a nice package. Coach Memo Perez was our defensive coordinator. His brother's the head coach now, Gabe Johnson, at Bloomington South. And he was at Carmel when we instituted the defense that we went to in year three at Tri-Central. And I would never go back. It's just like the 50 that I coached for years, except the outside linebacker became much more mobile. They did this in pro football. All those defensive ends, if they wanted to continue to make millions of dollars, had to become outside linebackers. Some did, some didn't. You got to have more speed, you got to have more passing ability, and you got to be able to come up and still take on those big tackles. So, yeah, I think when you look at the Tri-Central thing, Sheridan, we beat them for conference, and all their kids stood in the middle of the field with their arms crossed. I walk up to Bud, and I said, Bud, I said, what's going on? He said, well, these kids, they just want to watch and see what's going on. I said, Bud, you've beat me in conference championships for years. I've never done that. I said, you're kind of disrespecting me. No, they're trying to do something as a team. Well, what they did was, thankful for me, I didn't have to give a pregame speech the night we played them in the playoffs. You know? The game during the season was relatively close. They had a really good team that year. They were ranked in the top 10 of the state. And in the coming tournament, our kids remembered that. I had seniors right before we went out say, you remember when they stood and watched us as we won our conference? Yeah. And it was never a thump the chest thing. It's just, yeah, I remember that. And they went out and we beat them up.
You did.
In the tournament.
So what was the feeling like, though, as a former head coach at Central beating them and then Sheridan, which you already talked about, and then taking on an arch rival, too, when you're at Central Prairie to get out of the sectional? You had to feel pretty good about
well,
that.
Well, yeah. it looked like we had – everybody said we had an easy route, but the computer, the Segarin computer said we had a 1 to 3% chance to make it to state. And – no, at no point in time did we ever talk about the state championship. Never. It was never part of it. The boys wanted to win a regional. That's what their goal was. Because the 91, they had won a sectional. They've only won one sectional. And they wanted to one-up that group. So they wanted to win a regional. Well, when we won the regional against South Adams, and South Adams was a real physical team. That conference, that ACAC, is a tough conference. Those teams, I mean, they're every week. It's about like, you know, with Ben Davis and those guys at 6A. I mean, it's tough. So, yeah, we got South Adams, and now we got to play Winnemac. They're undefeated. They're leading the state in points. Only team that's even close to them is Eastern Hancock, and all 6A's. You've got Winamac and Eastern Hancock leading the entire state in every category offensively there is. So we travel to Winamac, and it's snowing, and we look out, and we got about 20 people in stands. And I thought, geez, I thought they'd at least come. So we go in. We do the TV interviews. We go into the locker room, and we come out of the locker room. Oh, my goodness. There's a line all the way to the highway of Central people because it was quite a drive for them coming off of work, and our stands filled up. We had a ton of people. And I told my staff, I said, guys, if we win this, Winamac has to help us because they were so good. It's the best team Winamac had ever had. And I'm coaching this guy that I'd known since I was a kid. Coach Roth and I go way back. We've had some wars on the field when I was at Pioneer. We never played them at Clinton Central, but this was Tim's year. So we go out there, you know, and here they are, huge, athletic, and they have bad attitudes. And they come out and they intimidate us. They run the line, the 50-yard line, and they're throwing insults and stuff at my kids. I'm kind of watching how my kids are handling things. They know how Coach Gilbert is. We have a very quiet pregame. My whole idea is to save the adrenaline for kickoff. Usually 3 minutes before the game, I deliver about a 30-second to a minute speech, and it's all to get the adrenaline flowing quickly from the kidneys. And when we take the field, we want to be ready for the opening kickoff. When we come out there, you know, nobody stopped them. They've been averaging 50 points the first half all season long. So they didn't know they'd not been stopped offensively in the first half. They destroyed everybody, even Pioneer. So they get the ball. They decide to take the ball, which I was grateful. And they go three and out. Well, Tim couldn't handle it, so he tries a fake punt. Didn't work. We get the ball. Yeah, we were ready for that fake punt. And then two plays later, we're on the one-yard line with four downs to get in. There's no way in the Lord's green earth. If we don't get in that 1 yard, yeah, we're going to lose that football game. But it took us three downs to get in. But we got in. And you could just see those kids' faces change. You know, it was like, I don't know if they overlooked us. I don't know what was in their mind, but they were not mentally prepared for us to challenge them, and that was great for our kids. And then we jumped ahead, and then we tried to give it back to them and then decided, let's just win this game, and we went on to win. Eastern Hancock was incredible. Two things I knew about Eastern Hancock. If we got to the state championship, we were going to win. I knew that straight up because we'd played them the first game, and they beat us. And you're saying, well, Coach, that's hindsight. You can ask anybody on my staff. I said we were going to win this game. I wasn't nervous about it. I did all the preparation. Had a young football coach there, coaching there. He had this guy that was an incredible running back. I knew he was going to showcase that kid on the highest level of football that we offer in the state. So we were going to take that kid out of the game. And by taking that kid out of the game, I thought that would be the difference. Why didn't anybody pass against us? I don't know. Why Eastern Hancock averaged 150 yards passing a game. Against us, they had like 30 yards. They could have thrown the ball. Winamac could have thrown the ball. I think they were fearful of our defensive line. We got to Eastern Hancock the first series, and I think he got a little worried, so he gave the ball 50 times to the Gilbert. His name was Gilbert, too. The Gilbert kid, and he was a wonderful kid. I coached him in the All-Star game. No way. They were not going to be able to beat us because they were putting everything into one kid, and we put everything into 39 kids.
Well, don't you think, though, that back in that time frame, 2013, that football was more of a three-yard cloud of dust type thing versus the run or spread out and throw the ball all over the place?
Yeah, the reason we went to the 3-4 is we could handle the wing T and the open passing scheme. That's a luxury of the 3-4. That's why NFL went to it. Now you're seeing more 2-4, 3-3 type defenses. I think Frankfurt runs a 3-3 or a 3-5. They're more compatible with the wide open schemes where basically it's like a 3-4 with a nickel. Input. But yeah, at the time, these teams ran the ball out of the shotgun. And when they threw the ball, they were quite efficient. Everybody said for years, if you ever look at the Gridiron Digest, that I had these great teams and I could never win the big game because I worked only on fundamentals. Well, that was our showcase in fundamentals. We played fundamentals throughout the course of that game. We stuck with the veer. And if you can't stop the veer, what are you going to do? You're going to lose if you had decent defense. And nobody stopped us all year long. The kids bought into it. We had good kids up front. And they believed in what they were doing. We could have probably ran any type of run offense and had success because they all liked each other. And they all counted on each other and held everybody else accountable. That's another thing we don't have. At Central, we tried going out and telling these seniors and juniors, you got to recruit kids. Yeah, coach. Well, they don't want to play. I can't remember when my first route, if we were down in numbers, I would tell seniors and juniors, we need more kids. There'd be more kids come. I don't know what they did. That's between them. But they got kids in the program. And kids were held accountable, you know? Kids didn't miss practice. Kids didn't come up with excuses. Parents didn't cover up for kids. And we're seeing so much of it anymore. You know, it's really unfortunate. Maybe it's just an old school thing, but I think practice is the most important part of everything. The game is fun. The game is exciting for parents. It's more of a job for me as a head coach and my assistant coaches. They feel the stress, and I want them to feel the stress. If they're going to have a vested interest and getting all these accolades, then they got to feel like they're losing something if we lose too. And my staffs always do that. I've had very little turnover over the years in staff. I've been able to keep guys, well, on the central staff, I brought two guys with me. They've been with me for 20 years. The one guy's been with me 13, still the defensive coordinator out here at Central. And he's one of the brightest upcoming defensive minds in Indiana football. I'm telling you, people are going to be after him. I talked to him last night because I'm working with Central's defense. I'm cutting plays and working with them, and I'm working with Tri-Central's offense. So I'm working with both programs to keep me acclimated with football. I cut film. I give them my insights just for fun.
No,
go ahead.
Is that the big difference between football from yesteryear and now? Is that there's just not the buy-in? There's not the caring for?
I don't think there's accountability. I think we have so many distractions now, uh-huh. And football's work.
Yeah.
You know, of all the sports, basketball, you're inside, you know, and they do all these games. And the other thing I think is one of the major flaws, and I saw it coming when it first happened, is the summer leagues. You know, people can say what they want, but how have they helped Indiana sports? You know? Say I have one boy that goes and he's playing on the top Indiana baseball team or basketball team. Well, you know what? That's great for him during the summer, but when he comes back, he's got all these fine skills, but he's working with guys in his own community that don't have the same level of skills as he does. And it's just, time-wise, it's destroying stuff. Everybody wants time with these kids. I liked it better when we started in August. We lifted weights all summer. There was no contact with all these sports. Everybody was on an even playing ground. And now, you know, the money's taken over. Mm-hmm. Parents spent all this mega money. My daughter, and I'm as guilty as anybody else. My daughter, I sent her to volleyball stuff. She was on statewide teams, all this stuff. She goes to college, a Division I school at Purdue, and was a javelin thrower. And she placed in the Big Ten. She was an academic All-American. My daughter did all this incredible stuff in a sport that I never paid much money at all for. Mm-hmm. And I think about all the money that I wasted down the line. Yeah. And with all these guys, hey, there's going to be scouts here at this game. So you got to be there. And people hear this, and they want what's best for their kid. They want to give their kid the advantage. Get in the weight room. Take their physicality and improve it. And then let your coaches coach them in that team atmosphere by which they are a part of. Now, again, I'm not trying to, this is my opinion, but I think the summer stuff has gone too far, and I think kids think games are just games. If you lose, fine. If you win, fine. It used to be if you lost a game, that was serious.
Also, I think the kids who go to these summer camps and then come back, they come back with a little different mindset than what they used to have as well, because they think maybe now, oh, I'm a little better now because I've been there and these kids weren't with me.
Yeah, and I just don't like it. I haven't liked it. You know, I really have to fight for kids anymore. And now their ADs are saying that June is a month that all kids should be able to have access to basketball, baseball, and all this stuff. Well, that's fine and good, but you get all of July, Coach. Okay, we got the moratorium week. We have Clinton County Fair. We have vacations. Yeah. We got dentists and eye doctors. Thank you so much for giving me July. What the living heck are we talking about there? You know? And you don't have time. Inner city, they don't have that problem. Kids have nothing to do.
Right.
So they take all of July. They have them every single day. We can't afford that in the country.
That's right. Coach, what do you think is one of the biggest challenges that head coaches have in football? And also want to ask, what do you think is the most important job a head coach has towards his athletes?
Wow. Those are two loaded questions. Let's start with the first one. I think one of the big problems we have today in coaching is Facebook, where people indiscriminately can go after a coach. I have mentored somewhere, I was trying to figure it out before I came here, somewhere between 20 and 25 head coaches. And numerous assistant coaches are still out there coaching different programs. And the thing that, when this Facebook came out, I told my coaches, you cannot look at it. I have never had an account with Facebook. People can say what they want until they have the desire to come and see me face to face. I don't want to hear about it.
Right.
You know, and people aren't like that anymore. They want to ridicule coaches, and everything's based on winning and losing. Winning and losing happens. It's what are we doing with your kid to make them a better citizen for Clinton County, make a better person, make them accountable so that they're going to live a productive life inside our community. You know, when Horace Mann came up with this concept back in the 19th century of public education, the whole intent was to develop people who could work in factories, number one, and number two was to create a citizenry that was not illiterate. Citizenship was number one as far as what we would teach in schools. Our elementary still do a good job. I think our high school does in places. With me as an educator, that was always number one. My goal was that a kid left Central, he didn't have to go to college or she, but what they had to do is become quality citizens and not prey on the system. That's what we want. We want them to pay their price, to be a part of what we're doing and actually accomplish something. I think, I don't know if I answered that, but that's about as close as I can get.